Welcome back to episode 8 of Soft Spot. This is our first episode focused specifically on soft history, and today we're going to talk about the Telemark raid of World War II. This mission was primarily conducted by Norwegian Soft, so we thought, who better to tell us about it than a current member of Norwegian Soft? So today we welcome Colonel Magne Rodal to join us on Soft Spot. He sat down with me and our Director of Military Relations, Ranger Rick Lamb, to talk about the raid, its historical significance, and some of the key Norwegian officers and their impact on Norway and Norway's partnerships. Let's hear what he has to say.
And then if we want to break it down.
Wow. The Global Soft Foundation.
My immediate reaction was, this is awesome. The Special Operations Community. Association for
Special Operations. You have our support. Let's move.
Welcome to Soft Spot.
The longest escape innovation in history is actually the Telemark raid.
Yeah.
Over 400 Ks.
Kilometers.
That's the part that really gets, because I skied 2 weekends ago.
Yeah.
And when I had to ski from putting my skis on to the lift, which was about 10 feet, at one point an older lady had to push me because I couldn't get there. I was just actually moving backwards instead of forwards. So I find that extremely impressive.
Yeah.
But so we were hoping today you could kind of, you know, tell us a little bit about that.
Sure.
And, you know, Rick, if you want to jump in.
This mission was like the first one that popped into my head, because there's a few missions in history that actually change history.
And, yes,
had you guys not knocked that thing out,
yeah.
Hitler got the bomb first, I mean, it would have been a totally different world.
That's right.
Because, you know, back in that day, I mean, because now people kind of think about, ooh, should we use the bomb or not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't hesitate to drop it on the Japanese. I don't think Hitler would have hesitated
to drop
it on us.
You know, when Hitler was driven into a corner, he would have used it.
I think so,
too. Oh, definitely.
And so just the sheer, I mean, the setbacks and the challenges and then their ability to just ski out of that place, it's an amazing story.
The significance of this raid, which happened 76 years ago, last week, so it's actually a long time ago, and this was just the raid that actually became one of the most, or the most important raid during the Second World War, which kind of changed history.
Yeah.
And that was the reason for this, was that Hitler was actually trying to acquire nuclear capability and actually get hold of an atom bomb, which he definitely would have used if he got his hands on it. In order to get that, he needed heavy water. This heavy water was actually produced in Telemark in Norway on the hydro plant there. So that's why it's called a Telemark raid, because it was actually against the heavy water plant from Norwegian Hydro during the Second World War. And Joachim Rønneberg, he was the commander of this raid. He died just recently at the age of 99, and he was the last surviving member.
Really?
And he's definitely Norwegian Soft's hero. He is our idol. And there are many reasons for this, not just for the conduct of the raid, but because he spent his life after the raid, which he conducted when he was 23 years old, and in educating young people and military, like our Norwegian Soft guys, on the theme of never again. So we in Norway, we say aldri mer, that means never again, 9 April, when we were occupied by Nazi Germany. So we will not allow that to happen again, and he was a proponent for that. So this happened in 76 years ago, the raid was conducted as a part of a Special Operations Executive British SOE mission from where Norwegian commandos were actually employed. They actually left Norway. They escaped Norway during the occupation in order to serve their country. From the UK. That's also where our king and government were also situated during the years of occupation from 1940 to 1945. So what happened on the actual raid was that there were three operations in this operation. The main one was Operation Gunnerside, which was actually when they conducted the raid. But prior to that, we actually sent in on Operation Grouse, a four-man team of Norwegian special operators, that were sent in as a kind of a recce team, mm-hmm. or the first team that would form the forward operating base, etc., for the team to come after. A huge catastrophe happened after that, because the Brits voted to send in gliders with British commandos, mm-hmm. In Operation Freshman, in order to take out the heavy water plant, okay. By force. The gliders, most of them crashed. The bombers that followed them crashed. And some that didn't die in the actual crashes, mm-hmm. they were actually executed by Gestapo on site.
Were the conditions just really bad, or like really were they
bad.
Shot down?
Yes, it was bad conditions, and it was they were discovered, and they were actually all executed. Those who didn't perish in the actual crash, and this was due to Hitler's Führerbefehl, which was an actual order that is prohibited during Geneva Conventions, of course. Mm-hmm. And that was every commando should be executed. So everybody termed as a commando, he was actually shot by the Nazis.
So not a single person survived that.
There were some who returned, mm-hmm. but the mission was a total catastrophe. So then enter Operation Gunnerside. Mm-hmm. There were six commandos with Joachim Rönneberg as their commander at mm-hmm. the age of 23. He was a lieutenant, mm-hmm. and he actually dropped in with the team. And at a little lake called Stryken in on the Hardangervidda in Norway. And they actually met up with Operation Grouse, the mm-hmm. people, then called Operation Swallow. And they moved on foot by polk and skis into the actual operation area. And
how far was that?
Oh, it's definitely far. It will take. It's a 3-day ski march. Oh. We do this every year to commemorate this, and I've done it 5 times myself. Mm-hmm. We do it with the special forces, and we do it with the military academy. So the cadets and officers of the military academy, we actually do the same thing they do. Sometimes we have the same equipment, mm-hmm. and the fun part is that I'm so old that I remember when we started this commemoration marches, to call it that. We actually met the operators that actually conducted the raid, 60, 65, 70 years before.
Mm-hmm.
And so we met those 80-year-old guys at their FOB in their original kit, and they took the last trek with us.
No. Really? Wow.
Yeah? So that was awesome. And, the reason why this was so successful, this raid, because not a single shot was fired. They actually... They came in, they did the march, they went over the ravine, mm-hmm. and they actually climbed up an icy wall, mountain wall, that the Nazis have deemed not possible to traverse. So it was impassable, but they did it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of our cadets, when they were pretty tired, kind of climbing that wall.
Oh, so you did the climb too?
Yeah, we did the climb. But when they looked to the right, there was an 85-year-old guy who actually had done that exact climb, 70 years ago,
mm-hmm.
On operation.
Put your hand here, Skippy.
Yeah.
That was kind of, they sucked it up and they just climbed on.
Nothing like getting shamed like an 80-year-old at wall climbing.
So that was great to be a part of that. Now, unfortunately, they have all died, but we've been able to record all this,
mm-hmm.
and this commemoration marches will continue with the Military Academy and Norwegian Special Forces. So I think that kind of we will kind of relive that operation and pay tribute to our old heroes, who actually are our forefathers,
mm-hmm.
Norwegian SOF.
Yeah.
Was there water in the ravine?
No. It was frozen. Okay. It was all frozen, and so this was in February.
Oh.
They landed on the 16th of February, and the actual raid was conducted on the night of 27 and 28th of February. So it was at the end of February, midwinter.
That's also one of the challenges too. Is the fact that you're sleeping out in little snow shelters or even maybe a small tent, but just the overnight
for
and making the march the next day.
Yeah, they're not starting incredible. This well-rested.
No, that's right.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's all this uncertainty on how many troops were there, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So they went in not discovered, not a single shot was fired. They went in, they placed the charges, and they blew the heavy water production line up. And Nazi Germany has then accumulated 500 kilos of heavy water, which was needed to produce the nuclear bomb, and that went all away. So it was a total success. So and then they escaped, and then they started the longest escape innovation route in soft history. Yeah. And that was five of the guys skied 400 kilometers into Sweden, and a couple of guys went to Oslo, and four of them, the last four, they stayed behind there to conduct other, you know, Milorg or anti-occupation forces operations in that region.
Wow.
And many of these people were actually, as I told you, together with us when we did these commemoration marches.
Yeah.
So that was really, really neat. And I'm really glad and honored to have been able to be a part of that.
I hope you all are enjoying this story so far. I wanted to take a quick break to talk about a Global Soft Foundation sustaining partner, Airbus. I'm sure you've heard of them before because the folks at Airbus are world leaders in providing global fixed and mobile secure communication services to governments, militaries, and security forces. Indeed, as the world's number one private sector military communications provider, they deliver the flexibility, resiliency, and security required by demanding governments and militaries. And they do this for all communications applications, whether they're land, airborne, or naval. As a truly global organization, the team at Airbus understand local markets, allowing them to support their customers wherever they are. With regional strategic sales and support services in Europe, the Americas, the Middle East, Africa, and the Asia Pacific, their presence on the ground where their customers need them most is bolstered by their global reach. Thanks, Airbus, for all that you do and for being a great GSF partner. Let's get back to it. So who do you think drew the shortest straw? The people who had to stay behind or the people who had to ski?
They all escaped. They all evaded it. So none of them were taken.
Okay.
The closest call was this was one of the skiers who got tailed by a Olympic or kind of a really great Nazi skier.
Oh.
And he couldn't shake him off, so we had to shoot him at the end.
Really?
Wow.
So, yeah. But they all tried to avoid it. And what makes Joachim and his team so brilliant and such an idol for us is that they spent a lot of their time after the Second World War, up to the day they died, to tell us why they didn't shoot anybody, why they tried to avoid killing people. And so that was kind of extraordinary. So when I brought the platoon of special operators to listen to Joachim some years back, he spent 1.5 hours explaining us why he didn't pull the trigger, which became a kind of as our soft guys expected to hear him tell about the heroic act of the Telemark raid, he didn't even touch it.
Hmm.
But he spent all his time explaining to these young troopers why he didn't shoot the German when he had the chance.
What was his primary reasoning?
The primary reason was the respect for life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you didn't have to shoot him, you don't have to shoot him. But of course, they had to release that individual out there, and some of the guys wanted to, of course, to get rid of him because he could give them up. He selected as a leader not to shoot him, and he spent 1.5 hour explaining this to us, which made a lasting impression on all of us.
Very cool.
So. I want to tell you, I grew up in the same street as Joachim.
Oh, really?
In Olesund. So I come from the hometown.
Did you know as a kid?
Yes, I was 15 years old. He was a friend of my father, too. And I was 15 when he told me that he actually was the commander of that raid. So it's quite professional.
Did that have something to do with your chosen career path?
I would think so, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. There was absolutely, as we are drafted in Norway, you know, there's a compulsory military service in Norway for both genders now. Okay. But so I knew I was going in. A lot of my fellow citizens didn't want to join the army and do their service, but there was absolutely no question in my mind that I was going to kind of avoid that. Mm. So that's where it started, and he's an idol not just to me, but to all my countrymen, actually. There's a statue erected of him in our hometown now, wow. And the whole square there is renamed after him.
Oh, wow.
So that was pretty neat. That was during his 95-year anniversary, and I was invited for that. So
that's
together
cool.
with a lot of there was Americans there and British SOE people there, and it was really, really neat to be there.
Yeah, that's something there, too. The SOE, the Special Operations Executive, that mm-hmm. was the British, right?
Okay.
They're what would you call them, the special operators? They a lot of heavy on intel, but also on commando type things.
Mm-hmm.
They helped form the OSS,
okay.
The U.S. Office of Strategic yep. Services. Yep. And those were the guys that would break into small teams, and they would go out and work with the partisans, the buy through and with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we kind of tie in with the OSS, but also the British commandos trained our initial Rangers. So. And then, of course, the Norwegians trained the first Special Service Force. It was World War II. I mean, it's kind of the
brought us together.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brought us together.
Absolutely.
And that's where a lot of the relationships came from.
Yeah, that's right. So these were actually commandos that served under SOE, the British one, and we also have people serving under OSS, which was formed by General Donovan. Who was the forefather of U.S. Special Forces and CIA.
Yeah.
It's all linked, and we see that today. Our closest ally is the U.S. and U.K., and so this still lives on.
What drives me crazy, too, is that everybody thinks the coalition thing is so new, and that it's only happened since 9/11, but really it goes all the way back.
All the way back,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I may, just to tell you the importance of this gunner side team and that operation and Joachim Rønneberg in particular and how he is. When he was 98, he was kind of selective on inviting people in because everybody wanted to interview him and visiting him and so on. And I was in my hometown and I talked to his daughter, who I know very well, and we were invited to his house. That was just a year before he died. He's still sharp as a nail.
Really?
And I brought my daughter, who was 12 years old.
Wow.
And she had a rose and gave to him.
Huh.
And he really appreciated that. And we should be there for 10 minutes or something, but we'd spend over an hour.
Wow.
And he really enjoyed it, talking to young kids and tell them about the importance of never again. And his daughter put this rose in a huge vase together with hundreds of other roses that was there. But 2 days after, I got an SMS from him with a picture of him and thanking my daughter for giving him the rose. And he had that exact rose that she gave him.
Mm-hmm.
So he had insisted on getting that rose Isabel gave him. And I knew this was not taken just after because he had different set of clothes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and his daughter said that, nope, he wanted to find that exact rose that Isabel gave him. And she understood what she had been a part of. That was the most important thing.
Yeah. That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with the first Special Service Force, when they initially, I think it was Lord Lewis Mountbatten, we kind of envisioned they wanted a force that could strike on land, on sea, on air, but also under winter conditions. Because the whole thing for forming the U.S. and the Canadians was to go after the Norwegian hydroelectric plants. So, I mean, everybody was worried about it. I don't think everybody understood, the danger in it because it was probably classified at that time. But everybody was mounting units to go after those things because that's, with it was a grave threat. But the guys that they trained in the U.S. In winter warfare techniques, but it was the Norwegians that came over, the Norwegian commandos, and actually taught them how to mountain climb, how to survive.
So they came to Canada.
I don't know if they came. If you guys came to the U.S. or we went over there, I would assume that they came to the U.S.
Yeah. And this what would be a keen interest for you as Americans is that you had a Norwegian-American unit called 99 Battalion, independent. And that was the unit that Donovan used later in order to kind of transform them into a special forces unit. So the only thing you have to be able to do was to ski, and you have to be Norwegian-American. And that was up in at Camp Hale, up in Colorado, up
yes.
in the Rockies.
Yep, yep.
So I just returned from there. So I did this commemoration with the 99 Battalion Foundation, 10 Special Forces Group, 10 Mountain Division. So this it's called the Heritage Skiing. So that's where I came from. I came right from Colorado winter and down here to Tampa now for this. And so this plugs right in between this Norwegian-American cohesion as far as Special Forces goes. So that was awesome, man.
You also bring in the 10th Mountain Division.
10th yeah, Mountain so, Division, yes.
So that was the 10th Mountain Division. They're still on active duty. They're out in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And but those guys were stood up, again, to fight in winter conditions. But a lot of those guys, once they returned from Europe, from World War II,
mm-hmm.
they were the guys that started a lot of the ski resorts there in Vail. And,
that's right.
They had taken the training that they had received, and they started the ski resorts.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That is cool. Yeah.
What can we do with this skill set? Yeah.
No, so we had a fantastic reunion. I participated in this last year. I brought my family up there, and we were invited back this year. And there are erected monuments for both 10th Mountain and 99 Battalion.
Outstanding.
And there is... It's great support also from 10th Special Forces Group. So the commander was there, and it's a really great event.
Is it just commemorating like the partnership, or does it represent like something that happened on a certain date, like specifically?
No, I think it represents both the relationship, of course, mm-hmm. but also the commemoration of the Second World War effort
okay.
from both these units. So it's now cemented. And it's to me, I'm very proud because there were two flags up there. It was the American and the Norwegian.
Yeah, I saw your picture. Time. That was
so,
very cool.
Yeah, so it was. I was so honored to be there.
And now you have to go on a ski vacation every year.
Yes, twist my arm.
Man's got to do what a man's got
to
do.
I have to go. It's symbolic.
Yeah.
No, very cool. Well, thank you for coming up here and taking a break to talk to us about that.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much.
Really appreciate it.
And thanks
it.
For the work you do.
Soft Spot is brought to you by the Global Soft Foundation, a 501c3 based in Tampa, Florida. If you're new to us, you can find out more about the foundation at gsoft.org. That's Gulf Sierra October Foxtrot.org.